Volume 1, To the West, Comanso. Chapter 1, Geometer and Priest. Sanjane has consulted the elders to ascend. He walks in the village of ancestors to learn the secret of the power of thought that even changes the past. He discovers what an illusion time is. A diffracting mirror. In the village of Kanga, the children cry, "Nana, Nana," and in their true Naganga eyes, a star shines, Zola Mama. Perched high on its frequency, it gains momentum and leaps. Nothing fades away when it comes back to the surface. He had said goodbye to his travel companions who went on their way, loaded with fabrics, jewelry, and small wood sculptures they planned to sell down south. Most of them were merchants coming from the north of the country, who, like him, had arrived at the big northeastern port. Some still had a long journey ahead, about 30 days, to reach the royal city market. Zoba was eager to see his wife, his village, and his friends. He had been at the prince's palace in the great northern region for 6 months. All this time, he taught science to the prince's children, mostly tradition, geometry, and writing. He had been apprehensive about his mission, wondering if the prince's children would be disciplined enough or how much authority he would have over them. But in the end, they were really focused and even talented. Sobadi, one of his closest friends, was the governor's chief scribe. They both came from the same region and had studied together. When the governor asked Sobadi which scribe he could recommend to the prince to help improve the education of his twin sons, Sobadi immediately thought of Zoba. Impressed by Sobadi's glowing description of Zoba's qualifications, the governor quickly suggested him to the prince. Excited, the prince asked the governor to bring him from the depths of his village and make him an offer he couldn't refuse. After a grueling hike through the rocky trails of the Mian region, Zoba Katuka reached a quiet village where cozy houses drifted light smoke. He had climbed a small hill in this otherwise flat landscape. The round, cone-shaped roofs spread out like clusters of mushrooms, growing at the edge of a grove of especially leafy, deep green trees that stood out against the vegetation he had seen so far. As he got closer to the first hut, he was stopped by a morbid groan. He quickly went around and found a young man leaning against a rotting tree stump, convulsively writhing. "What's the matter with you, man, squirming like that?" said Zoba. When no answer came, Zoba stepped closer and saw in the villager's revolted eyes the disastrous effects of an herb commonly found in these southern regions. In his delirium, the man had torn off his clothes and bitten his arms and legs until they bled. Zoba then began to laugh, with a strange, deep, low laugh. He leaned his head close to that of the young man, looked him straight in the eyes, then opened his mouth wide and let out a deep, long, resonant sound that gradually helped calm his delirium.
"Who are you, stranger?"
managed to say the still intoxicated villager.
"I'm Zoba, at your service. Zoba Katuka. What were you celebrating to get into such a state?"
"Lately, I just haven't felt like celebrating," the villager said. "And anyhow, leave me alone. My whole body's sore and my head's pounding like 1,000 drums.
"So you are extremely unhappy, and troubles and deep sorrows are dragging down your young life," the wise old man guessed softly, his eyes trying to catch the boy's shifting gaze. The young man, who had regained his composure, got angry.
"What's it to you, anyway? And what are you imagining, old fool, silly clown? I am truly happy as I am. I'm free. This hut you now admire is mine, and I invite here the friends I choose.
The land you step on right now is mine, too. I changed my life on my own terms. I no longer got along with my old friends. They didn't understand me, so I cut them off. My girlfriend was giving me a hard time, so I cut her off, too. My job wasn't good enough for me, so I quit one morning. And I have never slept better than I did that morning. My parents were criticizing me. They wouldn't understand me. I turned my back on them, and that same night, I danced and drank like never before. My life is up to me. It's still my own. I have realized I am young and free, and I want to make the most of it.
So, if I understand correctly, you smoke drugs to get the most out of the pleasures of life?
You bet! I want to experience all the pleasures. I'm young. Later I'll have time to be wise.
So you are saying that when you make up your mind, you'll change your life. But you are now happy the way you are.
Yeah, I'll change whenever I want, but I've got plenty of time.
That means this is a rough patch in your life. You were somebody before, now somebody else, and tomorrow you'll be totally different from both.
Yeah, that's me. But I don't really think about tomorrow. I take life as it comes.
So, at the end of the day, what you are telling me is that now you are living without asking many questions, which you will do later on when you feel like it. You are now in a transition period that you want to experience intensely, and it's important to you, just as much, if not more, than the future you are kind of pushing aside a little bit.
No, not at all. I do want my future, but later on.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you are still interested in the kind of fellow you'll be tomorrow, and you would like him to be the best and wisest possible version.
Definitely. Now I'm just having fun, but when I come to it, if I want to, I'll be serious, strong, and wise.
The young man's piece of land was a small, cleared patch of woods with a thin, winding stream around it. By the stump, there was a majestic shade tree with a strong trunk and lots of leaves, heavy with generous clusters of fruit.
"And how old do you think this magnificent tree is?" asked Zoba.
"Not a clue. Perhaps 100 years.
"And if we were to dig around its trunk to check the condition of its roots, do you think we might find that deep down they are all rotten?"
"Sure not," replied the villager. "Not a chance this tree would be so strong and healthy. Definitely the roots need to be fresh and healthy."
"Could you imagine this tree without its roots firmly gripping the soil of your yard?"
"No, of course not," the young man replied, annoyed. "But why are you talking about all this?"
"Because I was thinking about that future version of yourself. You want it to be big and strong, but you ignore it right now. A tree is a whole. The earth connects the corresponding and indivisible parts of the same truth. Do you think the dead tree you are leaning on had the same strong roots? How can you reject the present but still believe in the future? It's true. Life is a whole. People who pay no attention to the present forget that it's really the time of your life you have the most control over. Time is like a loom that never moves backward. What's been woven can't be undone. What matters is weaving as well as you can along the way, knowing that future weaving will be better if the work is started right.
I get what you're trying to tell me, Zoba. However, my life has changed too much all at once for me to build in the present. My roots are shrinking in the present, and my loom is loosening its threads.
You once were in a steady situation, and in spite of everything, you still hope for a new stable situation. Basically, what you tell me is that this transition is really hard, almost unbearable.
Yes, changing and finding stability is my biggest wish. Drugs make me forget, but every time I use them, I feel that I am even further from my goal, and then I just want to forget even more.
When I hear you,
it makes me think about transition. Transition. That's the important thing. You are right. You can't ignore it. If, during this time, you collect all your strength, you'll probably come out stronger afterward, without needing nearly that much effort. Imagine a vine over a canyon between two mountains. When you swing from one side, the stronger and braver you are, the higher the vine will carry you to the other side. But if you weaken while you are swinging, you may end up down in the canyon below. The transition is like a vine between two parts of your life. If you don't want to fall, hold on tight. And if you want to use it as a springboard, give it the push and the momentum it needs. But I don't know what to do to get out of this. I have no job, no love, and if I try to get back on my feet, no one will help me. The people I hang around with are just like me, and next to them, everyone else looks down on my poor efforts.
Let me tell you the story of Bimba Abwa. In a tribe up north, there was a teenager called Bimba Abwa, who had never walked and always moved around on all fours. Since he was a kid, his parents were heartbroken because this disabled child obviously could not help with heavy labor or hunting, as his disability made him too vulnerable. So, seen as a weak child, Bimba Abwa usually got the most foolish and despicable tasks. Usually they would put a wicker basket on his back. Thus equipped, his job was to collect garbage and animal waste. Sometimes he would also run small errands. The whole tribe saw him as a joke. Kids would chase him in packs, bark at him, mimic him, or take turns riding on his back shouting, "Come on, Bimba, bark!" The adults treated him like a loyal pet, patting his back as they would a dog. Bimba spoke very little in public unless he was asked to, but he seemed happy enough with his life, as it was all he would ever know. One day, however, while emptying his basket of trash as usual into the gap formed by a crevice at the edge of the forest, he fell in. Both of his arms, which he had raised to protect his head, broke when they hit the rock. Dazed, Bimba had to climb out using mostly his legs and sometimes his elbows. That's when he realized how strong his legs were. Once back at the surface, after a short distance on his knees, he tried to stand up, managing to awkwardly walk back to the village, where they treated his arms. The experience of his accident made him realize he could walk like everyone else. During his recovery, despite the laughs at his awkward attempts, he kept trying to walk on two legs. His efforts were not in vain. After 2 months, he was walking awkwardly. In the meantime, his arms had healed, so he was soon asked to carry out a few small errands. But people quickly complained about how useless he was. Although his arms had healed, Bimba Abwa stubbornly insisted on working while standing. They often had to beat him to make him do his job on all fours like before. But the more they beat him, the more stubborn he became. In the meantime, he was making huge progress, so much so that the people who used to hit him, out of habit really, had a hard time catching up to correct him. Bimba Abwa had, in fact, learned to run so well that one day he wanted to go hunting, and he proved he was capable and even gifted. Through a lot of effort, self-denial, and progress, Bimba became one of the most respected hunters in the tribe. The story you just heard, I got it from the current chief of the tribe, who told me about his own life. You see, the transition can be just as tough as trying to climb out of a cliff with two legs when you usually have four to help you. It can also be just as revealing, inspiring, and also rewarding. At that point in the conversation, Zoba looked at the young man with affection. Open your heart and ears. Listen to the song of the one who wants to rise up. On a day of futile hope, a day of weakness,
when you feel faint and sad, you have to believe that one beautiful day, hope will be reborn from the depths where disappointment has knocked you down. You need to awaken within yourself that little spark of playful mischief, the one that keeps you alive and feeling good. Do you hear that buzz? That's going to change your mood and carry you away in a cheerful vibe. La 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 la. Music is power. Music is wonder. It wakes up those feelings you have been holding back. In this changing world, it sets the rhythm, giving everyone their turn in the dance of chance. You need to let yourself be immersed by the subtle tide that floods your still trembling ears and lets you be carried away by this whirlwind of art and sound that will create the backdrop for a new beginning. La 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 la. After this discussion, Zoba befriended the young man whose name he learned, Muasika. It was in those encounters that Zoba truly felt alive, moments when he understood the meaning of his journey, of his long training, of the trials he had endured. In those moments, he grasped then with troubling clarity why he had studied so many mysteries and uncovered so many secrets shared by only a handful of men in this land. That boy was, in a way, a bit like himself, a boy who had wandered without parents or guidance from the age of 10 to 12 after a clan war had decimated his family. The boy who had scraped by, foolishly intoxicated by misdeeds and drugs, until he was taken in by Kalahira, a solitary and reserved priestess. Coming from a great aristocratic family, this strikingly beautiful and independent woman, once promised to the great king, regularly took into her palace about 10 street children, boys and girls alike. Among them, she chose him and a girl named Siba, adopted them and taught them the ancestral traditions. From this mentor, he realized he had inherited not only a deep knowledge of the visible and invisible, but also a genuine concern for others, and at the same time, a certain mistrust of feelings, both his own and in general. Thus, he had developed an ability that, unfortunately, could also be a burden in life, the ability to hide his emotions. His journey was still long, and despite the pull of home, he decided to stay with Muasika for a few days and almost made him a disciple. The villagers talked a lot among themselves and spoke poorly of Muasika and this stranger named Zoba, who had, however, tried repeatedly to get along with many of them. Zoba said to his heart, "I can't please everyone. And honestly, I don't want to be a shepherd for a whole flock. Instead, I want to guide my own offspring." So he taught his knowledge to young Muasika, sharing the power of laughter and the art of healing through the sounds produced by his voice. When Zoba left, Muasika had several chances to show the village the strength of his new powers. Zoba, on the other hand, was focused on the roads and paths, trying to make up for lost time. He had left a month before his contract was up, because the prince's children were expected for a reception at the big port in the northeast. The message he had given to a caravan of merchants 10 days ago to let his wife know he was coming back early might arrive around the same time as him. He felt a pang in his heart as he realized that he probably wouldn't be expected. In his village and the surrounding areas, Muasika would be in high demand for many healings, and he would become a very respected person. He would quickly find a wife, the chief's daughter, a beauty named Sora, who would give him a daughter named Lagu, and a son they would agree to name Zoba.